This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, we're here. It is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla. Now we're well into August. Summer is proceeding.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've actually gotten some comments on Facebook. I agree with Layla. It's, summer's going too fast. So you're the one who is...
It is.
You know, we got a little bit of a taste of fall weather here in New York last week.
Which is kind of welcome.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, it's a nice break. And, yeah, you know, fall's fun too, you know.
Right.
So, here we be. And what, is there anything in the news that you'd like to discuss before we get into?
It's been a bit of a sleepy summer, news-wise, I think.
Here's an item. I always preface it by, here's an item. Okay. So we know about the salad and salmon diet. The salmon and salad diet, and salmon. I'm not sure which it is by now. It may be that we need to amend that.
Okay.
Because based on paleoanthropology, we now have evidence of precisely what early human hunters ate. And this was in the time where Homo sapiens, which are the direct precursors of humans, coexisted with Neanderthals, actually outcompeted them. This is around 50,000 years ago. And there were all kinds of wild game there. There was a wild antelope, and there was even woolly rhinoceri in Europe.
Rhinoceri.
And there were... all kinds of large mammals there, bison and huge elk and cave bears that were ginormous. And I think in North America there were saber-toothed tigers and perhaps elsewhere. It turns out there were also mammoths there. And so they analyzed the bony remains. And what they found was that on the diet of early Homo sapiens, well, we probably should call it the mammoth and salad diet, because they consumed a lot of mammoth. But here's the other part, is they consumed a lot of vegetables. So you can imagine in the morning, the male hunting parties would fan out in search of large game.
Yeah.
And maybe gone for days. And the women would be like busily gathering.
Yeah.
All kinds of wild-crafted things that they found in the environment. And they knew, they really had knowledge, you know, what was edible, what was poisonous, what was tasted good, what didn't taste good. How do you take something that's really hard and tough and maybe pound it? Or they had the use of fire. They would heat it or boil it or roast it, you know, to make it more palatable.
Yeah.
And so they really had a lot of vegetables in this paleo diet. But it was mammoth. And it wasn't much fish. That was the other key. And one of the reasons for that is that during the ice ages, the oceans actually recede. It's the opposite of global warming, global cooling. And so they really inhabited a lot of landlocked areas where they didn't have access to seas and inland waterways.
So not as much seafood.
Not as much seafood. Neanderthals seem to consume more seafood, according to this.
Interesting.
But they, you know, the Neanderthals lost out.
So the mammoth and salad diet.
Yeah.
The salad and mammoth diet.
Right.
Which is so interesting because now I don't remember if it used to, if it's salad and salmon diet or
I used to be very vehement about it, but I don't remember how, whether it was the salad and salmon diet or, I think it was the salad and salmon diet.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Right. And some people would say, well, how do I eat that for breakfast? And I said, well, no, it's... The diet isn't just salad and salmon.
Right, right. Or people will say to me, but I don't like salmon. It's it's all right. That's just what it's called. Or certain types of salmon we want to be careful about. Anyway, the farm raised, which is a real problem. Even coming from, I just podcasted about it recently too. It's kind of the salmon coming from Norway, from Sweden, is quite polluted. Enough so to be carcinogenic.
Oh no.
So even, you know, the nice, delightful Scottish salmon I would enjoy from time to time.
From the North Sea, it's not good. Yeah.
Right, right. So we got to make sure it's wild.
Did you just get wild salmon?
Yeah.
And which of the type, there's some that's very red and there's some that's more pink.
Well, I like the sockeye, which is the highest in omega-3, but people make the mistake of cooking it too long.
Oh.
I just saw a patient earlier today. She said, every time I make it, it's really dry. I said, well, how long do you cook it? 20 minutes.
Oh, no.
That's way too long.
On the grill or on the
pan? On the grill. And on a grill, maybe 3 minutes aside and just let it rest.
Oh, okay.
Cover it, tent it, let the cooking continue a little gently.
Yeah, that's,
or something.
I almost,
or poach it for 10 minutes.
My palate is so accustomed to farm salmon. I try to get the farmed organic, but...
As long as it's organic, that's always
better. Yeah, but who knows?
Better.
You know, I'm wondering sometimes about the provenance because nobody's really inspecting that.
That's true, too. That's really the other thing. And the organic really doesn't cover the fish meal, which is not great. Yeah, it might be pesticide-free, but it's still stuff that salmon wouldn't normally...
Yeah.
Ordinarily eat.
And it's you are what you eat eats. And it's, you know, if the salmon are not eating feed that's rich in omega-3, then they may not be as rich in omega-3. They may be richer in omega-6.
That's true.
Like tilapia. It turns out tilapia, because it's like a pond-fed fish, has a worse profile, I hear, than poultry.
Yes.
Than commercial poultry.
Tilapia and catfish are so, they're equivalent, they're nutritionally equivalent to a donut.
Okay.
That's how it's been compared.
Oh, wow.
In what I've read. So stay away from any farmed catfish and tilapia. And even when they say wild caught, I have to question. But it's about where. There's nothing left to eat, Dr. Hoffman. That's really it.
Okay.
That's really it.
Well, lest we lapse into orthorexia, which is fear of everything.
Fear of everything.
Let's answer some questions.
Okay. We have an email from Michael. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, some holistic or alternative professionals employ muscle testing to determine what foods, supplements, etc.
When you said that, you did those air quotes.
Yes.
Air quotes.
You're right.
Muscle testing.
I'm kind of Michael actually puts it in quotes because he's not really buying it either.
Right.
So muscle testing to determine what food, supplements, etc. would or would not be beneficial or harmful for their clients. Michael says, I'm not sold on this modality since I haven't seen any studies about its efficacy. Also, it seems to be very subjective. What is your take on this test? Many thanks, and continue being a light of expertise and rationality in a field where such is lacking at times.
Okay, that's very kind. Thank you for your confidence. And I'll give you my take on AK, which is applied kinesiology.
Yeah.
And applied kinesiology, actually, there is a scientific literature on applied kinesiology, but it's not that rigorous. There are studies that suggest that it may lead to proper diagnosis. But it's actually kind of hard for me to imagine that by giving someone a vial of something to hold in their hand, for example, that you can determine if that substance is good to eat or not good to eat. Because what's being transmitted, some sort of energetic property or something is being transmitted. And it's unclear to me that that really represents a way of transmitting information.
I've even heard from people anecdotally and some clients as well, anecdotally, that they've tried it one day to get one result, a positive result, and they tried the same product, food or supplement, the following day or week and gotten a different outcome. So which do you believe?
However, that being said, in the hands of a skilled practitioner who dispenses good advice, I think it can be a tool to enlist patients to follow healthier lifestyle. And I've seen patients benefit after that intervention.
Yes.
So
I have too.
Yeah.
I have to question, hopefully it's a true benefit and not a placebo or a nocebo.
But, you know, I have no problem with it being placebo, you know, that it's a reprogramming of some kind or that it's a suggestion.
As long as it's a beneficial outcome.
It is providing a positive suggestion,
yeah.
And it's not just to sell people a million supplements unnecessarily or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've had patients for whom I prescribe supplements, and the way I prescribe supplements is I use my mind. and I'm sorry, it's not as robust as, you know, applied kinesiology, I realize. And it is subjective. But I try to base my recommendations on objective criteria, such as blood tests, but
right.
not just blood tests, but also what the patient is suffering from, what they might be susceptible to. And then
mm-hmm.
what will happen, and sometimes I find this kind of ungratifying, is patients then take all these things to their applied kinesiologist. And their
yes.
applied kinesiologist says, yes, yes, no, that doesn't agree with you.
No, you can't take that CoQ10. You have to take
whatever.
This CoQ10.
Right, or something
particular.
Like that, yeah.
yeah.
And, you know, that to me is, I don't know, it's unscientific. It doesn't appeal to my...
Yeah, and anything I've read about it myself, I'm just not finding
you know
it
what's
to
interesting
be...
is, I have to say, though, is that I had a colleague mm-hmm. who I respected very much, and he was very brilliant. And he was a board-certified neurologist
mm-hmm.
and an MD. And some may remember him. He passed away recently. Dr. Martin Feldman. And Dr.
Uh-huh.
Feldman was a sidekick of Gary Null. And he, you know, wrote a lot of collaborations with Gary Null. Very
mm-hmm.
capable writer. And a level-headed individual. Very pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
And not a, you know, like a... I mean, he you know... would wear a formal suit to a, you know, to a baseball game, you know, kind of guy, you know. And he did applied kinesiology.
Wow.
And it was interesting. And I said, you know, do you really think it works? And he was absolutely earnest that he felt it was beneficial and he would continue using it. Although
wow.
he was schooled in traditional medicine,
mm-hmm.
and yet he found this was a modality that helped him. Look, I mean, there are times where we just don't know quite what to do. And we're looking, is there some way we can make a decision about
yes.
something?
Yes. Yes, and a multidisciplinary approach is best. It's great to be open-minded
mm-hmm.
as well. We can't just say, oh, no.
Yeah.
So
with apologies to my many colleagues who do this, and especially chiropractors do this,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm open to it, but mm-hmm. I don't utilize it.
Right. Successful outcome for the patient is the most important thing, and if or when that works,
mm-hmm.
all the better.
Yeah.
Okay. Michael, thank you for your very thoughtful question. All right. We've got an email from Tom. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I listen to your podcast, and I've learned so much. I just had a CT scan done for some prostate issues, and in the report it says that there's some moderate atherosclerotic plaque along the aortic and iliac arteries, but no evidence of aortic aneurysm or intra-abdominal lymph adenopathy. My question is there any way to reduce or reverse this plaque by natural means? My vegetarian okay. friends tell me to become vegetarian, but
right.
I've heard chiolic, pomegranate
yep.
juice. I'm 67. My cholesterol is normal. Tom. Hmm.
I'm looking something up right now, which mm-hmm. is a study on the use of chiolic in patients who were getting calcium scoring for atherosclerosis.
Hmm.
And I recently did a podcast with the author of that study. Coronary calcium score benefits of aged garlic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from Science Daily. Science Daily is a aggregator of science news. New study shows aged garlic extract can reduce dangerous plaque buildup in arteries.
Mm-hmm.
Supplement can help prevent progression of heart disease. The researcher in question, I interviewed him, Dr. Matthew Budoff. He's at UCLA. And he is not an employee of chiolic. He is a researcher who actually is an expert on EBT scanning, heart
mm-hmm.
scanning. And he's conventional. He is not holistic. But he said, hey, if you want, I'll study it. And he studied it. And what happened was most of these patients were on statins.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just watched, you know, how rapidly the people on statins progressed without the chiolic versus how
yeah.
rapidly they progressed with kyolic aged garlic extract. And what they found was there was a reduction in the amount of soft plaque in the arteries of patients with metabolic syndrome who took aged garlic extract.
Wow.
So 55 patients aged 40 to 75, they'd all been diagnosed with metabolic syndrome, which means they were sort of pre-diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
They took 2,400 milligrams of aged garlic extract every day. And it slowed total plaque accumulation by 80%.
Wow.
It reduced soft plaque and demonstrated regression of what's called low attenuation plaque. So low attenuation means that it's not so much calcium score related. Once you have a calcium score, it's hard to reduce the calcium score. But I guess this study had the capability of identifying soft plaque, which actually doesn't have a lot of calcium in it. So anyway, that's, to me, very exciting news.
Would Tom benefit from chelation?
Chelation is another modality. It's been shown in patients who've had heart attacks that there's a reduced incidence of heart attack recurrence and subsequent events. The fact that he's got plaque in those arteries indicates that there's a likelihood of plaque in other places. So he probably should have a carotid artery test to see if there's a blockage.
Yeah.
And also an EBT heart scan to see if it's in the heart. Because this is just the first tip-off. Happened
right.
Accidentally. It was done accidentally because they were looking at the prostate and they said, well, there's a little atherosclerosis.
Yeah.
But I have to say that, probably most people past a certain age have some atherosclerosis.
Sure. And 67-year-old male, he would still benefit from 2 chiolic twice daily.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the optimal dose.
Other things, olive leaf, resveratrol, vitamin K, fish oil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All of those. Magnesium is beneficial. Tom, make sure you're not taking a calcium supplement in case you were. There are still
not
some men
dose,
taking...
Not
yeah,
high
not
dose.
High dose.
Yeah, I mean, the amount in a multi is probably innocuous, but
right.
to take, like, what they used to recommend, 1,200 to 1,500 milligrams of additional calcium, it's been shown in women that that may somewhat accelerate calcium deposition in the arteries.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't want that.
All right. Tom, thank you for your question. Okay. We have an email from Cheryl. Dr. Hoffman and Layla, what is your opinion on hair tissue mineral analysis? Is it a valid tool to assess the body's mineral imbalances, or is it bogus? I just had one done.
Yeah.
The result,
It was outlawed in New York right around the time I started practice, like 25 years ago or more. And the problem with it, a couple of problems. One is its replicability. And there was one study where they sent samples to a bunch of different labs, and they got a bunch of different results. So there's number one. You need specialized equipment, atomic spectroscopy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the other problem is contamination. And say you're using a shampoo, or say you're using, a hair product.
Hair color.
Yeah, or just walking around.
Yeah.
You might get stuff in your hair
right.
that could show up, because it's very tiny amounts can skew the test. The other problem is, let's say you have... Your body for example, you take something toxic and your urine might have a lot of it, but it's the body's effort to excrete it and your body may not be holding on to it.
Right, right.
So
bisphenol A is a good example of that. It's pretty readily excreted in the urine, bisphenol A that's in the lining of cans and plastic. It's a plasticizer
right.
product.
So
that's interesting.
However, what they found was that toenail mineral analysis may not be too bad.
Oh.
When they want to study populations in general, there's a certain amount of variation inter-individual, but for population as a whole, studying toenail levels of, say, selenium might be an accurate way of determining if there's an adequacy in a certain region or country.
That's interesting.
Of selenium.
I wonder, what do they choose a toenail because it grows 3 times slower than our fingernails, or
they know.
Maybe
know.
It's just okay.
Interesting. So I have to say, the other thing is I don't supplement based on tests.
Mm-hmm.
I think somebody asked me last week somebody asked about testing and whether relationship between testing. Oh, it was on the radio show.
Oh.
Somebody asked me about the relationship between. They said, this is how the question came in. Another doctor on another radio station says that before he gives anybody supplements, he tests them for everything under the sun. And I said, no, I don't do that. At one point I did, and then I lost faith in it because a lot of people are taking multivitamins, and they actually have fairly high levels of everything.
Right.
So does that mean that they don't need, say, a high dose of
CoQ10,
B vitamins or CoQ10?
Because they're on a statin or some other
reason. Plus, you can't test for EGCG levels, and you can't test for resveratrol levels. And so sometimes when we have an enigmatic patient, you know, I do some very elaborate functional testing, which is super complicated, and it's a little like reading tea leaves to find patterns. And that sometimes yields some insights into what's going wrong in a patient and what supplements can help them along. But actually, that's different from the regular blood test, because a regular blood test might be looking at just a level. And what we want to look at is whether a certain mineral or nutrient is functioning to optimize a certain pathway in the body. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So, for example, like fish oil. You don't necessarily have to have a deficiency of fish oil to benefit from a lot of fish oil.
Right.
To push a pathway that fights inflammation or cardiovascular disease, or improves your mental outlook if you're suffering from depression or bipolar or anything like that. So, as to hair analysis, I don't know. It's a bit of a gimmick to give people something objective when you give them supplements.
Right. So Cheryl has osteoporosis. She's on your protocol.
Okay.
For osteoporosis. Way to go, Cheryl, because that will give you many, many benefits.
Yeah, give us a report when you get your repeat test and let us know how things
exactly
turned out.
Yeah, not your hair mineral analysis, but other other functional tests.
Right, right. So, for example, I mean, the calcium in the hair, I mean, that's not a good analysis, good way of determining whether you're getting adequate calcium for your bones, for example.
Right, right, yeah. For instance, she had her hair tissue mineral analysis showed that she had a high calcium to phosphorus ratio.
Yeah.
And low sodium magnesium, and they had her, that's really not the way to, okay. All right, Cheryl, there must be a reason it's been outlawed. Wasn't it also outlawed in California? I don't really remember.
The worst part about hair analysis is that we used to say, okay, your hair might be contaminated, so give us a pubic hair sample. And for a while we were working with a lab, and from time to time the lab would lose the sample. But, you know, in order to get the right amount, they actually gave you a little tiny cardboard balance, like a scale, to see if you actually gave enough.
Oh.
And what would happen would be, we'd say, I'm sorry, you know, you submitted that pubic hair sample and we lost it. Could you give us another? And the people would say, oh my God, it's going to take me 10 years to grow.
You know, that's funny.
Because, you know...
Golly. Cheryl, thank you for your question. All right. Let's see here. Lisa writes, first off, I love both of you, Dr. Hoffman and Layla, and I've been listening to you for over 15 years. Your radio shows are fantastic and my favorite thing to listen to while working. Thank you, Lisa. Anyway, I've been reading a lot about collagen powder, the hydrolyzed kind, and how it can be very helpful for skin, hair, nails, and bones. Of course, as is often the case, and as it relates to health and nutrition, there's some conflicting information, specifically saying that it's a waste of time because once the collagen powder is in your gut, it just acts like any other protein and or amino acids.
All right. Can we tied that question over for part two, because we're running a little short on time for, we divide these podcasts into two parts, as many of our listeners know. So we will return in a moment and we will answer that question about collagen for bone and joint disease. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mutin, with whom I work side by side on a daily basis in my office here in Manhattan. And we'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.